I call this meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order. We have a quorum present. Our chair is presenting bills today. Our vice chair is off presenting bills elsewhere, so you're stuck with me today, members. Lee Johnson, have you had a chance to review the minutes for March
13th, 2024? Chair Norris, I have, and I make a motion to approve.
Lee Johnson moves approval of the minutes for the March 13th, 2024 meeting. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes from the March 13th, 2024 meeting are approved. One other housekeeping note before we get started. It is Vice Chair Egbaje's birthday, and so there are cinnamon rolls that she brought on the table over there. So feel free to help yourself as we go through today's hearing or grab one on your way out at the end. With that, we'll get to the first bill of the day. The first bill on the agenda is House File 4194 from Chair Howard. Chair Howard, would you like to move your bill?
Chair Norris, I would.
Chair Howard moves that House File 4194 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Chair Howard, I also understand that you have the A1 amendment. Would you move and describe the amendment, please?
Yes, I will move the A1 amendment. This is a technical amendment to get the bill in the shape I'd prefer.
Great. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? All right. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Chair Howard, to your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, members. House File 4194 is a bill that provides $500 million in housing infrastructure bonds, a bill that provides a level of investment consistent with the level of need. Last year, as you all recall, the legislature approved $200 million in housing infrastructure bonds, which will build thousands of homes for Minnesotans across the state and an investment that will make a huge difference in the lives of Minnesotans. But what we've also heard from Minnesota Housing Finance Authority is that they're still saying no far more than yes. For more than 3 out of 4 projects that received an RF, a proposal for housing infrastructure bonds, they did not get funding, which bears out that all across the state, the need is there. There are communities, there are nonprofit and for-profit developers that are ready to build, but specifically when we're talking about affordable housing, both to rent and to own, these infrastructure bonds can be the key piece, especially to help us build our most affordable rental units, which is where the need is greatest. Along with providing investment of $500 million, this bill adds to the eligibility of HIBs for affordable housing cooperatives to create and preserve more affordable homeownership opportunities. And it also creates a use for recapitalization of affordable housing developments. This is a crucial tool. We'll talk more about these folks in the next bill. But a tool to ensure that our nonprofit housing providers that are providing housing, especially for our most affordable population, has tools to make sure that they can preserve units and preserve this critical housing for our housing ecosystem and for our members. Members, we made big investments in housing last year with a B, and what this bill represents is the reality is we won't solve our housing crisis with one-time investments. We need to be diligent and clear-eyed on the long-term needs of our state, and bringing a bill forward like this with dollars that actually are commensurate with the need makes sense. I will say it's not breaking news that we may not get $500 million housing in terms of a level of investment in our targets. But I just want to underscore again, it's appropriate for us to listen to Minnesotans and bring forward bills that match the need and speak to the challenge ahead of us. It's my hope that we can deploy as many resources as we can, and HIBs are the right tool at the right time. And with that, I'll open it up to testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Howard. First on our testifier list is Electra Skrzydlewski. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name, correct me if you need to, and proceed with your testimony.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Good afternoon, Chair Norris, members of the committee. My name is Electra Strzedlecki, and I'm the Director of Shared Ownership for the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. MCCD is a consortium that is comprised of nonprofit affordable housing developers and economic development organizations based in communities that are across Minnesota. And I'm here today to ask you to support House File 4194, and increase the state's investment in affordable housing infrastructure bonds. Housing infrastructure bonds are a state's most flexible resources for affordable housing development and preservation. They have been critical to helping Minnesota make progress toward our affordable housing crisis and the shortage of stock. House File 4194 proposes to invest $500 million in housing infrastructure bonds so that we can preserve our many needed housing in deeply affordable state-funded assets and continue to make investments in new development for single-family homes, housing cooperatives, senior housing, and deeply affordable rental properties. To be able to continue this work, we need the state to invest in diverse housing types. By expanding eligible uses in housing infrastructure bonds to include the development of cooperatively owned housing. We can support new housing cooperatives and increase access for people that are interested in pursuing these types of models. Housing cooperatives provide a unique entry point to home ownership, and they are a proven method to support wealth creation and community stability through long-term affordability. Housing cooperatives also provide residents with greater community connectivity and sense of autonomy over their housing. However, one of the biggest barriers to housing cooperative development is the lack of development capital and ongoing funding. This bill would begin to address that issue by allowing housing cooperatives to be eligible to access housing infrastructure bonds. With your support of House File 4194 and by investing $500 million into this package, we can ensure that every Minnesotan has access to affordable housing of their choice. Thank you to the offer, Representative Howard, and thank you to the opportunity to testify today. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Electra Strzedlecki. Did I do it better than that? Strzedlecki?
Strzedlecki.
Strzedlecki. All right. I'll work on it. Thank you. All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Phoebe Trepp. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello. Hello, Chair Norris and committee members. My name is Phoebe Trepp, and I'm the executive director at Clare Housing. I'm here today to ask you to support House File 4194, and particularly to allow for and prioritize recapitalization. Clare Housing provides deeply affordable, permanent, supportive housing to end homelessness for people living with HIV. All of our units are for people under 30% AMI, and roughly 70% of our clients come to us directly from homelessness. While we serve 300 people each year, we have a waiting list of over 400. Our housing is saving lives and ending cycles of homelessness along with HIV transmissions. Our first affordable housing apartment project opened in 2005. In the last few years, costs have accelerated and have contributed to a new landscape where our future is suddenly uncertain. In 2021, we submitted funding applications to recapitalize our first LIHTC project that was in its 16th year of housing people. Funding for these projects is built on a 15-year budget that establishes and then draws on a capital and operating reserve through the 15th year. We didn't, unfortunately, create the system, but we are subject to the consequences. Our application for recapitalization was not awarded. We've resubmitted applications to preserve our building, and again in 2023, we're turned down. We're now in our 19th year with $0 in reserves. Our building has deferred maintenance issues, including an elevator that goes out intermittently, has parts that are no longer in production. When this happens, we do scramble to find double staffing, so if needed, we can physically carry residents down from upstairs in case of a fire. We have requested $3.9 million in funding to preserve these homes for a very vulnerable population for the next 15 years but have been denied by MHFA, Hennepin County, and the City of Minneapolis. We will try and submit another round this year, but if not selected, we really have no other choice than to look at selling the property. So additional HIB dollars, and particularly the prioritization of recapitalization, is essential to preserving projects like ours. And I ask for your support to help us continue this work, along with so many others doing work to end homelessness in our communities. Thank you so much. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Phoebe Trapp. Next up on our testifier list is Maggie Oddie. Please state your name for the record once you get seated and proceed with your testimony.
Thanks. Chair Norris, members of the committee, I'm Maggie Oddie. I'm the Community Developments Project Manager at Hope Community. I'm here today to ask you to support House File 4194 and increase the state's investments in housing infrastructure bonds. Hope Community owns and operates 237 units of quality, affordable housing that is home to over 800 individuals and families. We work primarily in the Phillips community to create connections that strengthen the power of community members and communities. Last summer, we had to make the difficult decision to close one of our supportive housing buildings, the Dundry, which ultimately resulted in 25 households being displaced and the permanent loss of deeply affordable housing units. Facing major operating shortfalls and having drained Hope's organizational reserves to cover security and maintenance costs, we could no longer safely keep the building open. It's now vacant, boarded, has had a fire, and we have an order to demolish the building. Like Clare Housing, we approached the city, the county, and the state requesting financial assistance over a period of 18 months, but received the same answer, that there was nothing that could be done. And so now, ironically, the amount we have to raise to demolish the building is about the same we needed to keep it open in the first place, around $200,000. It's a hard conversation to have, but it's necessary to understand the severity of the systemic problems Minnesota is facing to preserve our existing deeply affordable units. We hope that our story is never repeated, but with more than 2,500 units at risk of loss or closure because of the lack of funding available for preservation, we're worried that any progress we have made toward the affordable housing crisis will be lost. Please invest in housing infrastructure funding to preserve our deeply affordable housing and to continue to develop new single-family and multifamily homes. Thanks so much for your time, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Maggie Oddie. Any other members of the public who wish to testify on House File 4194? All right. Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chair Norris. And Chair Howard, you may know this, and maybe you need to phone a friend, but do we know what the outstanding HIBs are in place right now and what the debt service is on those?
Chair Howard.
Chair Norris, Representative Petersburg, I might phone a friend from Minnesota Housing. I'm trying to remember the exact amounts. I think if you give me a second, I could look that up. A fair amount, I think it's fair to say a fair amount that we deployed last year or authorized last year have been deployed, but I'm not sure if it's all of it. But we can work to get that information to you.
Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you for that follow-up. But I'm looking for also the aggregate, you know, all those that are still outstanding from previous years as well, and what the debt service is for anything that might be outstanding would be helpful to know, so that we also know, adding another $500 million over a course of at least 2 years, if not more, what that might be as well as would be helpful just to kind of understand the cost that we're dealing with here. When you get that, thank you.
Chair Howard, anything further?
We'll get that information to the full committee.
All right, thank you. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question along the similar lines. So we heard the recent forecast where the Walz administration is projecting a structural deficit. And I'm interested is what is the debt service on this? How does it impact the pending structural deficit that's been forecast? But maybe something that you can answer, if you would, Mr. Chair, is what is the current interest rate on these HIBs that are out? So that we can maybe mentally calculate what that would look like, if you have that. Maybe that's in the phone a friend as well.
Chair Howard.
Chair Norris, Representative Nash, what I can say is that the debt service, the cost in the tails is about $12 million per $100 million. The back of the napkin piece there. So I don't have the exact interest rate. I do know that housing infrastructure bonds do tend to have a pretty good interest rate comparatively, and why they've been such a strong investment in the past. But that's how we've tracked the sort of tails cost at housing infrastructure bonds at that level.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's roughly $108 million debt service, or $1.8 million. Yeah, so
half that.
So $12 million on every 100 if it's $500 million, right?
We're doing some math here, which is a challenge. I think 12 times 5 would be 60, right?
Yeah, but then...
Here, maybe let's...
Yeah, we're going to go to our non-partisan House fiscal analyst, Katrina Highmark. Ms. Highmark.
Chair Howard, Chair Norris, excuse me, Representative Nash, the debt service for the $500 million in HIPs would be $60 million in the tails, $20 million in fiscal year 26, and $40 million in fiscal year 27.
Thanks for bailing us out on that math problem. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I might have added ahead of the biennial, but the amount is staggering. And I get the value of these. I do understand that. But there also has to be an argument for fiscal restraint, that irrespective of how valuable some of these projects may be, based on spending decisions that have been made, that just can't work necessarily. So I would be very keen to see the phone-a-friend numbers in totality. And I know we're laying this over, and I know we'll have a chance to talk about it more if it were to be engrossed into a bill. But it just seems like a very large number carrying out beyond the next biennium, which is what I was doing. But it's an amazingly large number. And we can't definitively put our arms around the next 2 years, let alone beyond that. So the ease at which we are looking at tail spending is a little concerning.
Chair Howard?
Chair Norris, Representative Nash. What I would offer about housing infrastructure bonds is this is, you know, you liken it to the mortgage you take out on a home. You know, these are long-term investments with a multitude of ripple long-term benefits. So when you look at the totality of how we strengthen Minnesota into the long term, a critical piece is making sure that we have an adequate supply of housing. It's why we should pass other bills as well that I know we're more aligned on. But I believe this piece, making the kind of public investments where we know we can build more units, just helps deliver into the long term when you sort of look at both sides of the ledger, so to speak.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I get that. And I do think that we need to address it. But when I take out a mortgage, those are my funds. This is taxpayer funds. And there's maybe a philosophical difference that we have there as to the ease at which we enter into that relationship. But once again, the need, the value, the benefit, all those things are great things to talk about, but there also is the practical reality of what does the budget actually allow for. And I don't, all the wanting in the world and validity of the world doesn't make it less so when we look at that. And you know, these are not numbers that Republicans are making up. This is math that's coming from the Walz administration in there for. And I saw your name on the list when we were getting the presentation, so everyone has seen these. We know the reality. The practical reality is debt service is going to be a challenge. And I think that it's not being reflected here necessarily. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next on the list is Representative Dotseth.
Thank you, Representative and Chair Howard. Lost my mic. I will basically parrot what the other representatives had actually shared. I think we have to really be concerned about our debt services as we move forward. I think as the state of Minnesota, we need to be very cautious and be fiscally responsible with our monies. And these are very valid projects that we're focusing on, so don't take me wrong on that. But I think we need to really be looking at there's going to be a day that we're going to have to pay this back. You know, I think some of us lived through the foreclosure crisis in some of the past years, and I just see that the handwriting's on the wall if we're not a little cautious with as we proceed forward here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dotseth. Lee Johnson.
Chair Norris, Chair Howard. The debt service is a serious issue that we do need to discuss. Just on this bill alone, the debt service is $60 million. That's on top of I don't know how many millions we already are doing right now. And that's just in the HIB area, not counting our bonding. Who's responsible for it if things go south? We don't have a definitive answer on the HIB bond. Whether it's the taxpayers or not, we're not 100% positive where that goes, but somebody is responsible for them. But we also have people that are responsible for these buildings that we want to fix up. Now, I know on for some of the bonding for water and sewer projects, especially in these small towns, when I worked for the city of Braham, we were able to get a bond to redo our sewer plant. But one of the requirements was to put funds away so in 30 years, when he had to redo it, the funds were there to do it. Now, in privately owned buildings, they have what's capital outlay. They know in a certain number of years they're going to have to replace the roof. They know in a certain number of years if they have the boiler system, they're going to have to replace the boiler system, or they're going to have to replace the furnaces in the apartments. And they budget that in and put it in, calculate it in with the rent and what it costs to rent those apartments. They know that carpet needs to be replaced. They know that at some point they're going to have to paint the walls, do general maintenance. We had a test fire talk about they did 19 years ago, and they have no reserves. I'm concerned about that because that should have been built in. It should not be the taxpayer dollars paying for these. It's part of business. You have to look ahead and look to the future and plan. A lot of funds were given out last year in this committee, $1 billion. And that's the taxpayers' money. It's not our money. It's not belong to the state of Minnesota. It doesn't belong to nonprofits. It doesn't belong to private corporations. It belongs to the citizens of Minnesota, the taxpayers. We're spending a lot of money. I know that we need to look at housing. A lot of times when there's state dollars attached, it increases. We know it increases the cost about 11% to build and do the repairs because of other things. And that doesn't bring down the cost. So I think what we need to look at is how we can bring the cost of a home down. In my lifetime, a home was something you owned. You built equity. You built generational wealth through that. A rental unit isn't a home. It's a place to live, to lay your head down. Some people do call it a home, but they don't own it. Somebody else does. There's no equity. There's no generational wealth from it. This committee is housing and homelessness. Do we need to work at some of the things to get people going, give them an opportunity? Absolutely. But this committee needs to figure out how to lower the cost of a home instead of just building rental units, but to give people opportunity to actually own their home and have pride in their home and build that generational wealth. It's unfortunate that a lot of these buildings are getting dilapidated and need major work. But the question I have, should it be the taxpayers doing that? Because in privately owned things, it's usually up to the owners of the buildings. Now, in publicly owned, it's nonprofits. Yes, they're a nonprofit, but they are still responsible for the buildings to make sure things are running smoothly, making sure the maintenance is done, making sure they have the resources to do that maintenance instead of letting things get to the point where they can no longer offer that apartment for rent. So, like I say, I have new concerns about this. We'll discuss this more, and we know that bill is going to be laid over, so we'll hopefully we can have conversations about this on the side.
Chair Howard, I'll go to you first, and then if you'd like to, Phoebe Trepp, since her testimony was referenced.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Norris. There's a lot there. First, I want to say I think it really is important in this committee to say that whether you're a homeowner or a renter, your home is where you feel safe, it's where you feel secure, and everyone deserves that opportunity, whether you're a homeowner or a renter. Second, I want to be clear that housing infrastructure bonds are our tool to support that whole range, because the whole range is important. In this last year, we directed a record amount of housing infrastructure bonds to support home ownership opportunities. And that's been something we've worked on throughout the years to make HIBs a tool to address the whole continuum. So right here before us is a bill to make even more historic investments in creating pathways to home ownership. And then to the sort of point about preservation, there are, of course, inherent differences between a for-profit entity and a nonprofit affordable housing provider that is providing housing that, if not for those nonprofits providing that housing, nobody else would do it. For-profit isn't doing it. Government, frankly, hasn't stepped up to really do it. And there are tens of thousands of units of housing where our nonprofit affordable housing, I would argue, are incredible. We're going to talk more about in the next bill, our state assets, because without them, our housing ecosystem doesn't function. And we talk about costs. I just think about the exploding costs in terms of homelessness and any number of other costs if we don't create a housing ecosystem where our nonprofit housing developers can succeed. And so that's what this bill reflects. And I do hope that we're able to talk more about this and bring forward a bill that directs more housing infrastructure bonds, because it's such a critical tool to address our housing needs into the future, so that, you know, we're going to meet this moment long term.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Phoebe Trepp, did you want to clarify your earlier testimony?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Norris and Chair Howard. I just wanted to speak to the timeline and the process. When we have constructed affordable housing for 100% people under 30% AMI, it's definitely for people that often, almost always, turn down in the private market. So they are typically coming to us from homelessness, around 70%. And the way that we're required to submit those budgets for funding is a 15-year budget that says upfront we're going to put X dollars in reserves, and at year 15 we will have $0. That's the way the structure works. That's what we do because we're required to when we submit these applications. So I feel really proud that we made it to year 19, 4 years past, trying to balance out on a $0 budget. I wish the system wasn't created that way. It would make a lot more sense if we were able to actually bring in income. But when you're renting to people with zero income or 100% people with disabilities coming out of homelessness, we aren't able to bring in income beyond the floor. So just wanted to put out that we actually feel pretty proud of our maintenance and management of the building, knowing that we have extended far past the typical funding structure. And the intent when we applied for these for all of similar projects is that in 15 years we'd come back and see if the state still wants to keep affordable housing or not.
Thank you. Lee Johnson.
Chair Norris, the testifier, thank you for that explanation. We have a problem that needs to be fixed. Chair Howard, let's get that fixed so these companies can actually have the capital to do the renovations in their budget. If they have to have a zero money in their account in 15 years when the maintenance needs to be started, we have a huge problem. and this is not going to fix it. We need to make sure that they have the capital in reserves to do the maintenance, or all these things that we're doing now are going to be worthless in 15 to 20 years.
Chair Howard.
Chair Norris, Lee Johnson, I would say that there are structural challenges, and I think the next bill is speaking to some of those as well. But I believe that providing public investment through housing infrastructure bonds is part of the solution. And I think we've had a full discussion. I'm happy to proceed and look forward to bringing this bill back when we kind of have a little more guidance in terms of our budget targets.
Great. All right. And with that, I think, assuming those were your final remarks there, Chair Howard. All right. Thank you. With that, Chair Howard renews the motion that House File 4194, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And the bill is laid over. The next item on our agenda, members, is House File 4819. Chair Howard, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'll move the bill.
Chair Howard moves that House File 4819 be referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. Chair Howard, I understand that you have an A2 amendment. Would you like to describe that amendment, describe the amendment, please?
I would move the A2 amendment, which makes a series of changes that we think gets the bill in better shape. It adds clarity and reflects feedback from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. To get the bill in the shape to meet our intent.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Any discussion to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Howard, to your bill as amended.
Members, House File 4819 is a bill that reflects that we need to be in an all-hands-on-deck mode to address our affordable housing crisis. There's a role for private investment, for public investment, and as we just discussed in the last bill, our nonprofit affordable housing providers who together have tens of thousands of units of housing across the state who, if not for their leadership and for their work to provide this housing, we would have a problem of an inordinate magnitude. They've stepped up to do some of the housing that is the most hard to finance on razor-thin margins. The communities and populations that can be challenging to serve and matching services with those folks. And in buildings that are aging, like other state assets are aging. And it's important to note that a lot of these nonprofit housing providers really are facing a perfect storm over the last several years. I mentioned that the age of a lot of their properties, that the economic challenges coming out of the pandemic and in terms of collecting rents for their populations, exploding insurance costs, structural challenge with things like the coordinated entry system. The list goes on, and what it's added up to is nonprofit housing providers that are in significant financial distress. And these are, again, I view as state assets. They were projects that were likely developed with public financing, and we have a public interest in making sure that we continue to provide these units. And if we don't, we've already heard examples of units that will be lost forever. And preservation is the right priority, and it's also one that saves costs, in a sense. If we preserve the affordable housing that we have, that's going to be cheaper than creating new, and, of course, we need to do both. But that reality, the reality is that units are at risk across our state, and this is a bill that includes a menu of items that are designed to create a pathway to financial stability and housing stability, ultimately, for tens of thousands of Minnesotans, which should be our vested vital interest. The bill does that in a few ways. It includes a definition of recapitalization and accessibility for housing infrastructure bonds, which we just discussed in the previous bill. It includes some other tools and mechanisms to create financing flexibility for these providers. And it looks at, as we're directing resources, how do we prioritize this preservation to make sure we're actually deploying real dollars through the HIB process to these entities. The bill also includes some task force language because this is, to Lee Johnson's point, there's some structural issues at play that warrant everybody that's involved in this space to study and work to achieve long-term stability. And specifically, it also includes a task force on insurance costs, which is a national issue that's facing property owners all across the country, really. But it is very pronounced for our nonprofit affordable housing providers that don't have the margins or the rent collections to sort of weather what, like some of our for-profits have. But this is an issue. The insurance one is one that's not easily solved and one that requires a greater study. And so that task force is included in this language as well. As I mentioned, in total, what this package says that we as the state of Minnesota have a vested interest in the success of our nonprofit affordable housing providers, and that with their success is our success as a state. And this bill represents that and puts us on a path towards stability so that we make sure we're preserving the affordable housing that we do have all across the state.
All right. Thank you for that introduction, Chair Howard. We've got four testifiers on the list. The first is Ellen Solly. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Chair Howard, and members. My name is Ellen Solly. I'm president of the Family Housing Fund. Today I'm joined by my colleague, Andrea Brennan, who will follow me, who is the president of the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund. And together we help communities throughout Minnesota address their affordable housing needs. Complementing your investments, the two funds have invested more than $1.2 billion in private capital in the continuum of housing throughout Minnesota, from shelter to rental housing to homeownership. And our goal is to partner with government and developers to build a housing system that works for everyone. As such, we're in a good position to talk about the proposed legislation, House File 4819. I'll speak to the challenges that rental property owners are facing, and Andrea will talk specifically about how the proposed legislation addresses those challenges. As Chair Howard alluded to, many rental affordable rental housing operators are facing challenges that surfaced during the pandemic, yet the roots of the problems that they're experiencing predate the pandemic. There are varying causes, yet the challenges impact the affordable housing sector and the residents who call these developments home. Further, these affordable housing developments represent critical infrastructure investment that the state of Minnesota has made. The two housing funds' goal is to continue our partnership with you to preserve these valuable affordable housing infrastructure investments. Here is the challenge. Affordable rental housing providers have experienced significantly higher operating expenses from increased property insurance, additional costs of insurance or of security, higher property maintenance costs, and overall staffing, while experiencing a decrease in revenue from rent arrears, inefficient or slow rental payments. Chair Howard spoke to many of these challenges already. As a result, many nonprofit affordable housing providers have had to delay much needed maintenance to stay afloat against the backdrop of dramatic increases in operating costs and revenue reductions. This is not by choice, it's by necessity. And if we fail to address the challenge today, we put the people who currently reside in these properties at risk. A potential consequence is alarming. Our coalition has identified a minimum of 3,500 rental units across the state that have been sold in the past year, are being actively marketed, or are being considered for sale. That's a pretty significant number and makes a significant impact if those properties are sold on the overall stock of affordable housing in our state. It's also important to note that this situation is not unique to Minnesota. across the country, states and cities are grappling with the same issue. And there's no easy fix, but with your support, we can make progress. And I thank you for your attention and opportunity to appear in front of you.
Thank you, Ellen Solly. Next up is Andrea Brennan. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Chair Norris and members of the committee. I'm Andrea Brennan, president of the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund. Last legislative session, you approved historic levels of new resources for affordable housing creation and preservation. The successful implementation of these historic resources will, in large part, depend on the health of our housing providers, those working on the front lines to provide safe and decent and affordable homes for our most vulnerable residents in Minnesota. One of the unique assets that Minnesota has is a very robust network of nonprofit housing providers whose mission it is to not just provide bricks and mortar housing for people who need affordable housing, but to provide homes with services and access to all of the things that people need in order to be successful in their lives. You also recognized the importance of these housing providers in the system and took action to provide some financial relief for some of the challenges that you've heard today. Some of this relief came in the form of Stable Housing Organization Relief Program, or SHORP. Thank you for this investment. It is providing a lifeline for many organizations, and it created a bridge to help us develop a longer-term plan to stabilize and recapitalize existing affordable housing throughout the state. Since October, the two funds, Family Housing Fund and Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, together with LISC Twin Cities and the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, have been convening a coalition of 36 affordable housing providers, organizations, and philanthropy that focus on affordable housing statewide. More than 70 people from these organizations have engaged in this robust discussion that has occurred over 20 meetings in the last several months. The coalition has developed and refined some of the components in the bill before you today, including the expansion of housing infrastructure bonds to be able to be used for recapitalization of existing affordable housing, adding the recapitalization of distressed affordable housing that was created through the investment of past investments, a public investment, beyond just HIBs, but allowing other state resources to be used for the purpose of preserving our existing affordable housing stock through recapitalization is another component. And then also to look at administrative changes and how we can allocate these resources in ways that ensure the long-term success of properties that are financed with state funding. Additionally, and beyond this legislation, because legislation is part of the solution, not all of the solution, we are working with Minnesota Housing and local government funders to increase collaboration around ways that we can work together and collaboratively to stabilize existing distressed affordable housing. Taken together, these changes will help preserve both current and future affordable housing that low-income Minnesotans depend on. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea Brennan. Next up is Deidre Schmidt. Once you get seated, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Norris, members of the committee, pardon me. Thank you for hearing me today in support of House File 4819. Common Bond Communities, I'm Deidre Schmidt, and I'm the president and CEO at Common Bond Communities. Common Bond provides housing and supportive services in 50 Minnesota cities. We provide homes for more than 1,600 renter households in the districts represented by lawmakers on this committee. We provide housing for extraordinarily low-income seniors, those coming out of homelessness, as well as working families. and all of Common Bond residents can take advantage of our free services to help them stabilize and thrive. I am grateful that the legislature acted last year to support housing production and resident stability in a really historic way. I'd like to urge you to keep pushing for the types and amounts of housing resources that we need in Minnesota to not only produce new but also maintain existing affordable housing. One key theme in the conversations that the Greater Minnesota and Family Housing Fund, and the number one priority in my mind, the theme of those conversations and the number one priority in my mind is making sure that the affordable housing that we already own is well-maintained and prudently staffed. Given inflation in the operating expense categories that are largely beyond our discretion and our control, like insurance and utilities and security, which were mentioned earlier, many of our properties are running operating deficits. Operating deficits result when revenues from rents that are affordable to low-income folks do not generate enough to cover the expenses of those same homes. That is the case in most of our properties currently. Common Bond has cash advances outstanding to two-thirds of our housing communities, which is 7,200 homes. This totals nearly $20 million. And I would suggest that this shows how seriously we take our responsibility, Representative Johnson, when we sign on to develop and operate these properties. Many people are surprised to hear that we don't receive operating funds to support our work over time. The low-income housing tax credit and subordinate loans that are funded through the state agency and local governments and that comprise most of the resources that we have to do our work are one-time infusions to build homes. They're not intended to, and nor do they, consistently maintain them or provide social services. Now, we are working hard to find any efficiencies that we can, and we have been tightening our belt in all aspects of our operations. In fact, in November of last year, Common Bond had to reduce our workforce by 22 positions, bringing our staffing levels to a 10-year low. In the Minnesota Housing Partnership Survey that was referenced earlier, many of our peers reported being in a similar position and having to having really very limited choices of action in front of them. Many had deferred maintenance in order to pay their mortgages or to keep lights on or provide critical staffing. Maintenance and staffing levels are two areas of cost that we know most immediately and directly impact resident experience and neighbor experience. Cuts in these areas also undermine the quality of the physical assets in the long term. What many Common Bond properties and those of our peers require is financial restructuring and additional investment in older properties, like the one that Claire Housing was discussing. And in order to do that, as well as to continue to produce new housing, our system needs additional resources. Hence the request for an increase in the HIB. It also needs clear direction to prioritize this activity. Existing affordable housing assets, which have hundreds of millions of dollars of previous public investment, state, local, and federal, are indeed in danger. And the stability and sustainability of housing for so many Minnesotans might not include a ribbon cutting, but measures in House File 4819 will make sure that we aren't losing ground faster than we can build new homes. Thanks for hearing me today.
Thank you for your testimony, Deidre Schmidt. Last on the list is Chris Latondres. Once you get seated, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Norris, members of this committee. I'm Chris Latondres, President and CEO of Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative and recently former Hennepin County Commissioner. I served as HRA Chair and Co-Chair of Heading Home Hennepin. Beacon is among Minnesota's most prolific developers of permanent supportive housing that's deeply affordable homes with on-site services targeted to meet the unique needs of our residents. In the months since I traded my gavel for a hard hat, I've learned a few things that I wish I had better understood when I was a policymaker. Number one, Minnesota's nonprofit affordable housing ecosystem is extraordinary, but it's also fragile. Without this dynamic public-private partnership, few of our collective housing goals are possible, and we need to protect it. Two, the mental health crisis, opioid epidemic, and aftershocks of the pandemic economy have hit our residents hard. For Beacon, this means operational challenges, surging costs, and declining revenues stacked on top of already razor-thin margins and old assumptions about the actual costs of serving residents, especially in supportive housing. We're counting our runway to operate current service models in months rather than years. And I don't intend to be alarmist, but the stakes are high, with 3,500 units in our sector and thousands more residents at risk in the next year alone without urgent action. The state's SHORP funding came at a critical time. It's a lifeline. But it was also a short-term response to a structural problem. We need long-term systemic solutions, and that's what this legislation is about. It's about expanding housing investments to meet the moment, continuing to build new affordable housing with a newfound focus on adequately capitalizing services and operations reserves. It's about serving residents living in homes made possible by yesterday's state investments through recapitalization. And it's about reimagining our housing system moving forward. Minnesotans deserve a sustainable, affordable housing system that works, and this legislation puts Minnesota back on that path. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris Latondras. Any other members of the public who wish to testify? All right, seeing none, we'll move to member discussion, and I see Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to briefly make sure that I understand the process, because we talk about this over the years as well. These housing infrastructure bonds, sometimes we talk about home ownership, other times we talk about multi-unit. Do these cover all aspects of housing, or are they strictly for a single home ownership?
Chair Howard.
Chair Norris, Representative Petersburg, there are in statute eligible uses for housing infrastructure bonds that over time has been expanded. So allowing for single family uses is in recent history we've made that change. And so it's in statute where HIBs can be applied. And this bill would clarify or make sure that this recapitalization is an eligible use.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I'm assuming that these properties, these units, housing units, have some sort of revenue recapture as well. Where does that revenue go to?
Chair Howard.
Chair Norris, Representative Petersburg, to support the, I mean, I think what we heard from our folks is that while their revenues have dropped, it sort of supports the viability of the nonprofit itself, but because we've sort of seen their revenues dwindle, or dwindle is maybe not the right word, but shrink while costs are growing, that's partly why they're facing this challenge.
Representative, you're good?
Thank you. No, I've got a few more questions.
Oh, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. So it sounds like what you're saying is that right now the revenue recapture is going to back towards actually just running the properties and maintaining it, which is still isn't keeping up. But the bonds were actually created to actually create the asset itself.
Yes.
And we know that that's only going to get worse going into the future, meaning, again, more and more subsidy on top of the other piece. My final question is just, so then who ends up owning the asset, the equity in this facility?
Chair Howard.
Chair Norris, Representative Petersburg, the nonprofit housing providers, you know, themselves are the operators. And I would defer if there's a more specific answer from some of our providers, I'd invite folks up. But
Representative Petersburg.
Well, I mean, I think that's the question I have. So the bond pays for the building or the purchase or the recapitalization or whatever, and it's just basically given to the operator to run without any input from them. And they are having now trouble making ends meet with just providing the maintenance and capital in order to keep the property up and running. That means that these bonds then aren't ever going to be generated back, which means that they are indeed going to be a full requirement of debt service for us into the future, which, again, I just want to make sure I'm clear that the asset then and the equity in that asset then goes with the provider that's getting it without any consideration back to the state. Is that correct?
Representative Peterson, I mean, Chair Howard, I don't know. It looks like Deidre Schmidt might be available to answer the question.
I'll take a stab and okay. Then why don't you come up. But what I would say is what the state is getting is an asset that we've put investment into, making sure that we continue to be providing affordable housing for Minnesotans. And if not for this public investment, that housing could absolutely go away. So I would say Minnesota is absolutely, if they're getting something, what they're getting is, protecting this state asset, this state investment.
Deidre Schmidt.
And I can maybe add a little bit more technical detail. So first to say one of the virtues of the housing infrastructure bond is its flexibility. As you noted, it can be used for a number of different purposes. It can also be used in conjunction with a number of other financing mechanisms, the low-income housing tax credit, senior programs through HUD. And so there are a variety of ownership models that go along with those kind of additional funding sources. But one thing that you should know about the housing infrastructure bond is that while it kind of divorces the repayment source from the financing mechanism, the State Housing Finance Agency has the ability to and does put a lien on the properties where it gives the housing infrastructure bonds. And so it doesn't give up on the prospect of eventual repayment at some point in history, particularly if the asset were to go out of use in service to the populations that it was intended to serve.
Representative Petersburg.
Just one last question, because that kind of confuses me a little bit. So you say they have a lien on the property. Does that mean that if the property should be sold or whatever by the owner, the state would get some of that back, or does that stay with the person who or group that owns it right now?
Deidre Schmidt.
I'm sure there's variation within the portfolio, but I'll tell you, when we have deals that we have that are financed through housing infrastructure bonds, there is a lien that is placed on the property to the benefit of the state. It may not be that there's ultimately, especially if the properties are allowed to deteriorate, there may not be sufficient value in the deteriorated assets over time so that you could find yourself with a piece of paper that's a lien that doesn't provide you any value. But the point that I was trying to make is that the state not only gets the benefit that Representative Howard was talking about over time of the continued provision of quality, affordable housing for those who really cannot afford much in the way of rents, but it also does have a long-term string, if you will, tied to the actual asset.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. We'll talk more about this as it goes forward, but it does seem that if the state has allowed it to deteriorate to that level, we've not done our due diligence. And I don't disagree. The state is getting the benefit of the housing. So, that's part of what's valuable. The question I always had is where does the asset, where does the actual because generally speaking, all assets like this grow in value. And so that value is also there as well. And so I always look for follow the money, shall we say. So, but I understand it does have a value for people to provide housing. I'm not disagreeing there. I'm just trying to figure out the dynamics and the composition of it. Thank you.
All right. Representative Dotseth.
Thank you, Representative Chair Howard. The question I would have is I'm assuming we probably have a record of how many units this encompasses. Do we have a record of that?
Chair Howard.
Chair Norris, Representative Dotseth, there isn't like a an obvious, clear way to know the exact amount of units, but I think it's fair to say there's, and we've heard sort of testimony that several thousand units are probably at risk, and in collection, a lot of the I think we're talking about tens of thousands of units in terms of affordable housing providers that operate this kind of housing that are experiencing these kinds of challenges.
Representative Dotsett.
Thank you, Representative Chair Howard. With that, do we have any accounting of how many vacancies we have in those current units right now?
Chair Howard.
Chair Norris, Representative Dotsett, I don't have a clear number. I know that vacancies is part of a structural challenge. This kind of gets in the weeds a little bit, but I mentioned challenges with coordinated entry. There's some systemic challenges with that. It's one of the things that I think we have this task force in here to sort of study what are the issues to get to long-term sort of stability. I think this is the vacancy issue is one of them because from my vantage point, the issue isn't that there aren't people that could fill these units. The issues are structural challenges to make sure that we can connect people with the housing that's available. And so this bill would seek to work through some of those structural challenges and provide us with some guidance about how to reform state policies, et cetera, to get us to a better place.
Representative Dotsett.
Just a follow-up question. If you were to guess, what percentage would you say would be vacancies right now?
Chair Howard.
I don't have that information. I don't think it's a huge number, but it's a number that carries with it, given the kind of the margins we're talking, you know, a considerable cost for a developer to have a unit open.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion to the bill? All right. Representative Hussein.
I don't have any question. Chair Howard, thank you for working so hard and try to address the issue that we're seeing, the housing crisis in our state. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any further or final remarks, Chair Howard?
Chair Norris, members, I appreciate the discussion. This is an issue that we really need to be laser focused on as the legislature and as the state of Minnesota to seek solutions for our whole housing ecosystem. We can't ignore these challenges, and we have a role to play. That's what this bill recognizes, and look forward to the work we still have to do this session in moving this and like-minded policy forward. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, Chair Howard renews the motion that House File 4819, as amended, be referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no?
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 4819, as amended, is referred to the Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. All right. And that concludes our business for the day. Thanks for going easy on me, members, as I pinch hit as chair today. And we'll look forward to seeing you all back here next week. The meeting is adjourned.